This is Father William, once again, coming to you from the studios of WMRW, FM 95.1 in the Mad River Valley. And sitting above the lovely co-op where I just had a wonderful greeting from Ashley Woods, she just makes your day so lovely to be around her, doesn't she? Well, as I said last week, I'm going to continue again this week with what I began, and what I was doing is I'm sharing some stuff with you all from work I did 3 years ago in the newsletters that I put out then, and I don't sound like I'm not getting you here. I see. Is that better? Oh, sorry about that. The microphone was a little low. Now, maybe we should start that again. Well, good morning, the Valley. This is Father William on the first day of September in 2010 with another Father William's Amusings, where we take a little time out of our lives to make some meaning of our lives with, in this case, mostly the words of our lives, but a little bit of the music of our lives as well. And I do want to repeat my lovely thank you to Ashley Woods down in the co-op below me, who just made me feel so welcome when I walked in. And what I'm going to do is continue sharing with you some of the words that I was contemplating 3 years ago during that summer of 2007, when I would write each month for the Center for Third Age Leadership newsletter. I would write my musings, Father William's musings. And I'm going to begin with this one, even though I ended with it last time, because I didn't have the music to go with it. And this is such a great story, because what we are do focus on much of the time here in Father William's work, because, you know, I'm not a priest. I took that name from the Alice in Wonderland poem, "You are old, Father William," the young man said. And I am old. I'm 72. But I'm really enjoying this part of my life. So I keep, keep exploring it more and learning about it, because the culture certainly doesn't give you much much good support for getting older. Because I'll refer to the third age. Just very quickly, a way to think of life is to think of it in four ages. The first age being sort of that age when you're getting ready for life. You know, you're in childhood, infancy, childhood, and adolescence when you're, you know, getting ready. And that's what we call the age of preparation, generally up to around 20 or so in our time. And then second age is the age where, you know, now you feel like you're an adult and you're going to amount to something, make something of yourself, and we call that the age of achievement. And of course, because you're concerned about making something of your life, about achieving, you are focused on the external world, because that's where you get the sort of applause or the boos for whatever you're doing. So the age of achievement, second age, is pretty outer directed. And then third age, which it comes over probably somewhere between 45 and 65, depending on excuse me, what kind of life you've been living. But it's the age which we didn't used to have. You used to, you know, to live first age, second age, and then you got old and died. But now, like in 2000, in 1900, average life expectancy in the U.S. was 47. In 2000, it was 77. So a way to think of it is we get a 30-year life bonus. You know, 30 years that we didn't used to have. And it's not an extension of second age. It's a new territory, and that's what I'm having fun exploring. And a way to think about when you sort of hit that line where you're going to move into third age is the Peggy Lee song, "Is That All There Is?" You can still do everything you were doing just fine, probably better than you were because you've got more experience in second age, but it just doesn't turn you on anymore. That all those, you know, pats on the back or as a friend of mine says, pats and biscuits that you would used to get externally just don't matter that much anymore. And often this is accompanied by some sense of loss, some sense of depression, because of course the culture around us is making us feel like it's wrong to get older. getting old is a bad idea in almost every image portrayed. But third age, for what I'm finding, is a marvelous time, because I just don't care very much what other people think of me. I certainly don't like to be harmful or hurtful to anyone, but it just doesn't matter. I don't care much about how I look, as my family will tell you, and I just am having a good time. So these musings, the fourth age, by the way, I'm not there yet, so I can't talk about it, but it's the concept is that's the age when you really have come to the point where you're ready to go on to whatever going on means, to another plane, and you're just ready, you put yourself in order, and you're ready and looking forward to making the transformation beyond this physical life. But we're on third age, that's today. So what I want to do with you is I'm going to start, what I do with these newsletters is each newsletter I do is I write some thoughts, just what's going on in my head at that month. And I always get a quote, I find a quote that usually inspires me or often inspires me. And this one was a quote from Ishtok Perlman, the violinist, where he said, "You know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left." And I'll say that again. Perlman said, "You know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left." And so here's what I wrote as I learned something. I got sent a story by a friend. And it was a pretty significant year, 2007, because my sons Scott and Matt complete their 40th and 25th years, and that was the year I was completing my 70th. So we had some symbolic thresholds we were all crossing. And I got this story sent to me by friends from when we lived in North Carolina, Ellen and Jim Farad. And the story goes, "On November 18th, 1995, Ishtok Perlman, the violinist, came on stage to give a concert at Avery Fisher Hall at Lincoln Center in New York City. If you've ever been to a Perlman concert, you know that getting on stage is no small achievement for him. He was stricken with polio as a child, and so he has braces on both legs and walks with the aid of two crutches. To see him walk across the stage one step at a time, painfully and slowly, is an awesome sight. He walks painfully, yet majestically, until he reaches his chair. Then he sits down slowly, puts his crutches on the floor, undoes the clasps on his legs, tucks one foot back and extends the other foot forward. Then he bends down and picks up the violin, puts it under his chin, nods to the conductor, and proceeds to play. By now the audience is used to this ritual. They sit quietly while he makes his way across the stage to his chair. They remain reverently silent while he undoes the clasps on his legs. They wait until he is ready to play. But this time, something went wrong. Just as he finished the first few bars, one of the strings on his violin broke. You could hear it snap. It went off like gunfire across the room. There was no mistaking what that sound meant. There was no mistaking what he had to do. We figured he would have to get up, put on the clasps again, pick up the crutches, and limp his way off stage to find another violin or else find another string for this one. But he didn't. Instead, he waited a moment, closed his eyes, and then signaled the conductor to begin again. The orchestra began, and he played from where he had left off, and he played with such passion and such power and such purity as they had never heard before. Of course, anyone knows it is impossible to play a symphonic work with just three strings. I know that, you know that, But that night, Ishtok Perlman refused to know that. You could see him modulating, changing, recomposing the piece in his head. At one point, it sounded like he was detuning the strings to get new sounds from them that they had never made before. When he finished, there was an awesome silence in the room, and then people rose and cheered. There was an extraordinary outburst of applause from every corner of the auditorium. We were all on our feet, screaming and cheering, doing everything we could show how much we appreciated what he had done. He smiled, wiped the sweat from his brow, raised his bow to quiet us, and then he said, not boastfully, but in a quiet, pensive, reverent tone, "You know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left." That's the story. Isn't that beautiful? You know, it is sometimes the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left. What a powerful line that is. It has stayed in my mind ever since I heard it. And who knows? Perhaps that is the definition of life. Not just for artists, but for all of us. Here's a man who has prepared all his life to make music on a violin of four strings, who all of a sudden, in the middle of a concert, finds himself with only three strings. So, he makes music with three strings, and the music he made that night with just three strings was more beautiful, more sacred, more memorable than any that he had ever made before when he had four strings. So perhaps our task in this shaky, fast-changing, bewildering world in which we live is to make music, at first with all that we have, and then, when that is no longer possible, to make music with what we have left. To make music with all that we have, and then what we have left. It seems these are the same to me. All that I have is what I have left, and vice versa. Unless I imagine possibilities opening up in the future that are not available to me now. And that's one of the great divides between Second Age and Third Age, isn't it? In Second Age, the culture helps us believe life is just opening up for us, and that the future holds possibilities we can only glimpse as we dream. Then, we cross the boundary into Third Age, and suddenly the culture tells us, we're over the hill. Possibilities and potentials are things of the past, and we will have to make do with what we have left. I don't mean to take anything away from Ishtok Perlman's incredible three-string performance, nor from the profound meaning of his statement. But our culture's distortion of aging might distort that meaning, and some might interpret his words as the tired utterance of an old man who overcame enormous obstacles to achieve a new level of greatness one last time. That's not what happened based on my own Third Age experience. I feel certain Perlman could never have completed the piece with only three strings back in his Second Age. I believe he drew on some element of his mystical maturity to replace the physical void of the fourth string, and that he did so with great joy and playfulness. I can almost see the twinkle in his eye when he said, "You know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left." There is an art to aging, and my last decade's focus has been to learn what it means to be an artist of the Third Age. One of the things I've learned to do is open to whole new universes of potentials and possibilities that my serious Second Age had closed down. These lie in realms that age calls invisible, imaginary, mystical, or even, God forbid, spiritual. They are non-material abilities, and they do enable one to play a violin with only 3 strings. While available to all ages, these potentials become more visible and usable as Second Age culture loses its sway over us. And that's really important, that phrase, you know. As Second Age culture loses its sway over us, meaning that Second Age, all those shoulds of Second Age, lose their power over us. When that happens, we are able to be more profoundly present as we become less distracted by the opinions of others. And our increased presence finds wonders in what we have left that far offset any physical diminishment. Think Star Wars, Yoda, or the Karate Kid's Miyagi. I know I'm pretty far out there again, especially when I start talking about non-material possibilities being real. But I'm certainly not alone in this regard. Do you remember the Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus editorial Francis P. Church of the Baltimore Sun wrote to 8-year-old Virginia O'Hanlon? A part of it went like this. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch all the chimneys in town on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus. But that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are things that neither, the most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof they're not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. Church went on in his editorial to say, you can tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside. But there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man, not even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fantasy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else real and abiding. Like Perlman, Church was offering a glimpse beyond the veil Second Age brings down on our childhood and is reluctant to ever raise again. For one of the great delights of Third Age, for old Father William, is raising that veil again. Well, I mean, that story is just so inspirational to me. So here we go. Here's Ishtok Serlman playing Opus 1, 24 Caprices, Opus 1 for solo violin. Thank you. Ishtok Perlman and the Canons Opus 1, 24. As you can tell, I'm not much of a very knowledgeable about the classical music. I don't even know how to say the title correctly, but my God, it was beautiful, wasn't it? I mean, incredibly just beautiful. So thank you, Ishtok Perlman, for the music and the lesson. So this is Father William. We'll go into the second half of our show here, and this is a set of musings I did in July of 2007, which I entitled Serenity and Acceptance, Cause and Effect or Paradox, and see if that question, cause or effect or paradox, serenity cause acceptance? Does acceptance cause serenity? Or are they some form of paradox linked together? The quote I began these musings for was from Tony Hillerman's thing called Sacred Clowns. And it was really appropriate because sometimes I get, just like you, I'm sure, pretty well devastated by some of the just awful stuff that happens to the planet in terms of droughts or floods or hurricanes or man-made disasters. But Tony's quote was this, is about terrible drought, crops dead, sheep dying, spring dried out, no water. The Hopi or the Christian, maybe the Muslim, they pray for rain. The Navajo has the proper ceremony done to restore himself to harmony with the drought. You see what I mean? That system is designed to recognize what's beyond human power to change, and then to change the human's attitude to be content with the inevitable. Now that's a fascinating kind of comparison, isn't it, between whether we pray to have the external circumstance change to suit us, or we pray to align ourselves or ask to align ourselves with the inevitability of the external circumstance. So when I read that, it really kind of caught my attention. So I went and looked up a little bit more about what that practice was. And that quote describes the Navajo practice of Hozol, which Sony Pitts elaborates this way. Hozol cannot be adequately translated into a single English word. It is the essence of the Navajo way of being, a sense of elemental rightness that is core to their way of being, a way of being that we could do worse than to strive for in our own lives. Hozol is a word of depth and layers, meaning at once harmony and beauty, truth and balance. To be in Hozol is to be at one with and a part of your environment and the world around you in such a way that the notes of your life complement and resonate with the symphony of life all around you. You neither pitch above nor below the thrumming chords of the universe, but yet at the same time, your melody stands on its own merits and is heard with utter clarity, pure in tone and pitch and strength, yet subsumed in the whole. This Sony Pitts, I need to find out more about her, but I found this on the net. Isn't she great? She goes on, Hozol is not the easiest word to explain, but its essential meaning can be intuited through experience. Think of those times when you felt as if you truly were part of creation all around you, yet clearly still a singular being, at once loved by and in loved with all that was around you. Perfectly matched, perfectly balanced, perfectly in tune. Walking with beauty and rightness and joy in every step and every breath. That is Hoso, and I wish you the ability to find it and live it in your own life. End quote from Sony Pitts. Thank you very much, Sony. As I learned that from Sony, I then also recalled that back in May of this same year, I'd used the Serenity Prayer as a starting point for that month's musing. That prayer goes, "Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." Hoso deepened my understanding of what accepting the things I cannot change asks of us. And I'm finding this particularly useful in my third age. This deeper understanding raises chicken and the egg questions. Is it serenity that produces acceptance? Or is it acceptance that produces serenity? My guess is it's probably both, like the spiraling strands of our DNA. And once again, we find our maturity has plunked us squarely in the non-rational reality of paradox and both and. This can be very uncomfortable if my psyche needs a right way so that it knows what to do. If your cultural conditioning is like mine, you'll try to escape the psychological tension of paradox and make one of the poles cause, more chicken, and the other more effect, more egg. We're talking about achieving peace of mind here. Which of the questions above seems more chicken and which more egg to you? I can't tell. My conditioning has led me to think the first, serenity produces acceptance, is the way this world works. If I can attain serenity through meditation, drugs, prayer, ultra running, or whatever gives me a detachment high, then I'll be able to accept, that is, cope with, any difficulties that come my way. This belief system, that serenity is the cause and acceptance the effect, means I've invested a great deal of energy and experience in trying to find serenity. That's an interesting paradox in itself, isn't it? Investing a great deal of energy and experience in trying to find serenity without paying that much attention to learning acceptance. I'm pretty sure now that I've been missing at least half, if not more, of the serenity-acceptance relationship. But when the student is ready, the teacher appears. On my arrival back to Vermont from New Zealand, this is back in the summer of 2007, the lovely Nancy Wilson Rhodes lent me her copy of A Thousand Names for Joy, Learning to Love What Is by Byron Katie with Stephen Mitchell. And voila! My learning about how to make acceptance the chicken and serenity the egg leapt into gear. This is no easy thing for a 40s and 50s kid raised with the archetype of John Wayne as his model for being male. As best I can remember, the Duke never accepted anything. He made his reality, and when it no longer suited him, he changed it. If he wanted peace of mind, he made peace of mind by kicking reality into the shape he thought it should be. As far as I could tell, acceptance and defeat were the same thing to him and all the others in his mold, which definitely included me for more years than I like to think about. No more. Now I embrace the marvelous paradox of both masculine, make it happen, and feminine, let it happen. What the Navajos Ho's Ho and Byron Katie have done is add a dimension to let it happen I've been missing. The act of accepting can create the serenity that brings me into harmony with myself and with the world. That's called peace of mind, and it's a beautiful place to be.
Okay.
I know some of you are having a bit of trouble with this.
Problem. probably seems like way, touchy, feeling, same old things. Maybe I'll lose my mind, my credentials. So be. Third aid, opening the paradox. And the more I do it, the better my life is. Making let it happen happen. Maybe one of the greatest paradoxes I've encountered to date. If you'd like to give it a try, check out Byron Katie on her website. And now, I've got a piece of music for you that it captures for me the very... And for years, this I first heard in 1972. This is the last piece. There are five sections to John Denver's Season's Suite, which are about how we are like the seasons. We go through summer where we think everything is going to be great forever, and then we experience the fall where we feel the sense of loss, and then we go deep into the dark and grayness of winter. But then again, we come out in spring again. The same chorus goes through much of it, but I just want to play this one, the spring piece, that piece about when you feel like you are at the same time part of everything and one with it, and yet you are still the being that you are.
Open up your eyes and see the brand new day, a clear blue sky and brightly shining sun. Open up your ears and hear the breezes say, everything that's cold and gray is gone. Open up your hands and feel the rain. Open up your mind and let the light shine in. The earth has been reborn and life goes on. And do you care what's happening around you? Do your senses know the changes when they come? Can you see yourself reflected in the season? Riding on the tapestry of all there is to see, so many ways and oh so many things. Rejoicing in the differences, there's no one just like me. Yet as different as we are, we're still the same. And oh, I love the life within me.
John Denver and the spring piece of his season suite. And that, when I get to the place where I am able to be in that paradox of fully accepting and the serenity come together, that's one of the ways I feel. Like I'm a part of everything around me and everything is here in me. So I hope that the Hozo of the Navajo and a little of the spring's season suite give you a sort of, your own form of a little step toward whatever serenity and acceptance are for you and how you make them work for you. Now, what I'm going to do is I didn't write any musings for August of 2007. There was a quote, you know, which I really like, from Alfred de Souza. It said, "For a long time, it seemed to me that life was about to begin, real life. But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be gotten through first, some unfinished business, time still to be served, a debt to be paid. At last, it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life." And that's what Third Age has done for me. At last, it has dawned on me that these obstacles were my life. Or as John Lennon so beautifully said, life is what happens when you're busy making plans. That the things that I wanted to get past, over, beyond, that is my life. And in the that quote, of course, connects back to me that in my acceptance of those, there's a great deal of serenity in my life. And then all I did was, for my musings that month, I just said, "Old Father William is taking a summer break to enjoy those obstacles of my life. Hope you have relaxed time for yourself to enjoy the rest of the newsletter. We'll see you back here next month." So then I'm going to go right on, because while I was taking a break, there was a reason I was taking a break. And I thought I would share that with you. This, because my guess is you've had experiences not unlike this. I've said, "My August newsletter began, Old Father William is taking a summer break to enjoy these obstacles of my life." That was code for, I had a stroke. True, I did. But it wasn't, for me, it was a very light one. I want to make that clear. On July 22nd, I woke up and couldn't talk correctly. Part of what I said was garbled, but not very much. More interesting, part was crystal clear, but reversed. On one occasion, I introduced myself as, "Hi, I'm Katie's mom." Many chuckles. This went on for 2 days and stopped. I had no other physical symptoms. I played golf and beat the other young punks. I knew what I meant to say clearly in my head, and then would hear it come out quite differently, sometimes hysterically differently. Monday afternoon, a CAT scan made it clear I'd had a stroke. This is a new world for me. I've been blessed with virtually perfect health for 69 years, and suddenly I'm one of the millions who knows he's mortal and is going to die. This means, at much deeper levels than ego, I am ordinary, as are we all. Early in life, this would have been very disturbing news. Now, after 5 weeks of integration and of assimilation, I more often think about being ordinary. I think, well, of course. But I'm clearly still in radically changed territory. So this newsletter reflects some of the disturbing changes that come with Third Age. A friend, Louise Sheehy, sent a poignant and powerful piece about dealing with the death of an ex-spouse. Many families, including ours, will cope with this reality. By coincidence, I picked up Circling My Mother by Mary Gordon and have been deeply moved. Our family has two parents in different assisted living homes, and Mary's description of her own mother's decline is our story as well. But while there can be great challenges as we age, there are also great possibilities. To remind us of this balance, Jenny Joseph's wonderful poem, "Warning, When I Am Old I Shall Wear Purple," is a great gift. As for my journey, it's clear I am much too inexperienced in this new life territory to reach any conclusions so soon. And that was 3 years ago. I don't have many new conclusions now, but I'm much more willing just to be present in the territory rather than having to know what it's about. What I offer in the rest of these musings are some thoughts from my journal over these past 5 weeks, in hope that they may be useful to you. So, these were thoughts I had 3 years ago after the very easy stroke I had. One was getting a glimpse of some of the changes I'm going through. Even though there were virtually no physical symptoms during my stroke, except 2 days of talking funny, a lot has been shifting down at the tectonic plate level of my psyche. I'm still pretty sure the stroke didn't do anything to me of physical significance, but the medicines certainly are. I get short of breath after climbing the 52 stairs up to our parking lot or doing a minimal work out on strength training machines at the sports center. I'm also tired and sleeping 9 to 12 hours a day. This is my first experience of feeling real encroachment that supposedly will last forever, because basically mine was a clot due to atrial fibrillation, so I need to take warfarin or Coumadin for the rest of my life. Okay. Body-wise, I've really been charmed to the extent of always being thought to be at least a decade younger than I am. And not only have I looked good, I've felt good until the last 2 weeks. Isn't it amazing to live 69 years with hardly ever having a physical hardship one can remember? I have been so fortunate. A little later in the 5 weeks, I wrote, I'm different inside. I doubt many see any difference, but I sure do. I'm focused on feeling safer, and that's a whole new universe for me. That was a very interesting shift. I'm focused on feeling safer. Well, maybe not so new in the sense I've always wanted to be comfortable, but that's different than seeking safety. For example, it never occurred to me before I should live with someone, so if I became incapacitated, there'd be help available. I cannot imagine a greater gift than living with some of my family, and I am very, very grateful. But the point is, I'm thinking about how to be safe and secure. What a change in perspective this is for a younger guy who always saw himself as an adventurous seeker. A little bit later, I wrote, I have no idea what my next stage of life might look like. When I'm up, it's fascinating. When I'm down, which has been quite a lot these last weeks, I understand how people think their lives are over and hunker down to protect themselves from pain. I have moments where I think like that, and I realize I'm like my parents in ways I never wanted to admit. It does me so much good to write. I'm finally accepting I've been affected and changed by what we've been calling my stroke. Had no idea how locked up in denial I've been. And then my friend and mentor, Elder Ed, who is now 91, and we correspond pretty regularly, he sent me this. He said, I'm so fortunate to have someone who's well along and has had the experiences or his versions of them I'm having. He wrote, your references to things like weariness that extends beyond itself, what you have always considered the norm for your virile self. Is this part of the realization of a deeper self that is now demanding your attention? I'm asking, not telling. You already know what your past is. So is there a spirit within you that is asking if you also know the larger human, the higher human, which wants also to be known by you in a fuller way? Isn't that an incredible question to be asked at a time you've just had a stroke? He says, your body is still there. It's healing from a trauma, and that is where your energy is going. But in addition to energy, there is a pulsation striking you which is, in essence, the light and the fuller love that is within you. That's what wants your attention. While the healing is taking place, why not give the essence the attention it wants? When else is there better time to do it? And I wrote back to Ed, and I said, thanks so much for this guidance, Ed. I'm certainly paying more attention as I digest my recent experience. I almost feel as though I'm in some sort of pause state, waiting for the pulsation striking you, which is, in essence, the light and the fuller love that is within you, to trigger me into life. This feels something akin to the prince's kiss waking Snow White. It seems a stroke should be enough to wake me. I'll take your words to heart and see if I can't feel the pulsation coming from within. And that was the way it was for old Father William on September 3rd of 2007. How it will be in 30 days, I've no idea, I wrote back then. But despite the moments of fear or limitation, I feel a new awakening to the profoundly beautiful and simple life around me. And I still do, 3 years later. And the progression continues, and I'm just much more accepting, wanting to like to learn from the Navajo and align myself with what is the inevitable that isn't going to be changed by me anyway. And now, just let's go out with a song for you that is just captures this spirit for me of what I'm doing with some of this, some of the advice I've gotten from Ishtok Perlman, some of the advice from the Navajo, some of the notion of how serenity and acceptance can reach together. And this is a song that has always makes me feel like, yeah, this is what I'm doing now.
I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the east, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tease? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the east, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tease?
I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend in the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Stowing away the time. Are you
Reeling in the Years by Steely Dan. Isn't that a great old, just a great old song? And I do, I just love listening to, you know, I just love to it, because it, not so much for the words, which I usually am tuned to, but very much for the sound. That, the way they, the sound of Reeling in the Years, that's what I feel like I'm doing. As much fun as it is fishing, you know? Anyway, this is Father William thanking you for listening, and, we will be back next week at 11 a.m. on Wednesday with, I think, some more musings. I'm kind of getting a kick out of them. They're really helping me think about some more deeply some of the thoughts I had earlier. So until we see you next week, have a great 7 days.